Think about it for just a second. Two people, two young people, a male and a female, and they have stars in their eyes. You've seen this picture before, right? And they're at that point in their relationship where the man drops the one knee and he says, "Baby, honey, sweetie, if you'll just spend the rest of your life with me, I can promise you that our life is going to be I can promise you we will live in a house that will be okay. I can promise you that I will always treat you okay. I can promise that our life will be average." Would she say yes? If the ring was big enough, she would. But still, that's not how you propose. If you're sitting across at a job interview, and you tell the potential employer, "Hey, I've got the skills and the experience and the passion to keep this company at this level. Not take it to the next level, but I can, right where we are, I'll keep you there. I will never be more than 5 minutes late, but I will never be early. And I will be the most average employee you have ever had." You getting that job? Nobody wants to be average. And in fact, we have a word for that, and that word is mediocre. Now, I did, funny story, and this is only for this service, so this is exclusive, okay? There are a couple people in the services that will, like, take pictures of the screen, and, you know, they put them on Facebook and what we're talking about, and I'm usually in them, and I'll sometimes steal those, and I'll use them on my own, because I'm like, yeah, it's cool, that's a verse behind me, it's cool. So there's a picture of me somewhere standing here, mediocre, that somebody snapped at the last service, so... really thankful for that. But we have a word, mediocre. You know, nobody wants to be mediocre. Nobody wants to be average. You don't want an average relationship. You want a fantastic relationship, or at the very least, you want a predictable relationship. But you don't want a mediocre relationship. You don't want a mediocre job or an average job. And you don't want to work for a mediocre employer. Nobody strives for mediocrity. But it's my belief that we actually have a society and a culture that's kind of hardwired to make us mediocre. We have a culture that insists on us being average, insists on us being mediocre, and that's not what we were designed for. God set his people apart. That's what we're talking about in the ancient Hebrew people during the period of the Judges. God set his people apart for something special. And he didn't set them apart for something average or something mediocre. He set them apart for something really significant, something that was completely contrary to the culture and something that was completely different from what was going on around them. And God sets us apart. God's people are to be different. And we're certainly not supposed to be mediocre, but society makes us mediocre. And it's probably because life, stay with me on this, life is kind of like a beer commercial, okay? And you've seen these before, right? Now, this is not my anti-drinking sermon. We can have that later. But life is like a beer commercial, because you look at these people, and the first thing that I notice, they're all happy, they're all smiling, right? And they're all skinny. Now, what do you call it that the guys, when they get in like their 40s and 50s, and they're in pretty decent shape, but they have, what is this called right here? Beer belly, beer gut, right? Some ladies have it too, but we'll just focus on the guys. And that's called that because we know something about the consumption of beer, that over time it makes you fat, and it particularly kind of settles in the way. But none of these folks aren't fat. They're very skinny and pretty. And they don't use a beer commercial to show, they don't show damaged vehicles and damaged lives and damaged relationships in a beer commercial. They don't show aspirin and coffee down at the bottom. They don't show hangovers in a beer commercial. They just say, "Hey, check this out. This is cool. Just do this." And they tell you that you should take your cues from everybody else. And that's with any commercial, any product that they're pushing. Just do this. Just do this thing like everybody else is doing this thing. And you know what? If you take your cues from everyone else, you end up like everyone else. And we talk all the time about taking our cues from, okay, we should respond the way Jesus would have responded. We should respond in the way that Scripture tells us to respond, and that's how we should take our cues. But culture says to take your cues from everybody else. Respond how everybody else would respond. And the problem with that is, if you take your cues from how to respond from everybody else, you end up like everybody else. And everybody else is mediocre. So there's this different way of living, and it's the contrast between outside versus inside. An outside way of living is that everything outside that I see, that I smell, that I hear, that I taste influences and changes the inside of me. And that's not how God designed his people. God designed his people. God wanted for his people to be an inside-out people, where he would make a change on the inside and it would change everything on the outside. But we oftentimes live in an outside-in mentality, where everything on the outside influences. And you know this because you've said this. You're like, I can't unsee that. Whatever it was that you saw, you can't unsee it. You can try to forget about it, but you can never wipe it from your memory bank, that awful thing that you saw, and it influences you and it changes you. And you don't even have to be talking about, you know, something perverse or something lustful that you saw, and now that you know you're damaged, your relationships are damaged, and your view of intimacy is damaged. It can just be stuff that you don't need, right? How many of you like your car, your vehicle, right? It gets you from point A to point B, it's not, you know, it works. But have you ever had like a friend get like a new car and you sit in it and what's that smell? It's leather and soap and it's just like, man, this is nice. And then you go back to your car and it smells like Cheetos and feet and it's gross. And you can never unsee that car. And now you have to buy a new car. You are perfectly happy with your vehicle, but you can't unsee that. You can't unsee that person. You can't go back and unmeet that person. You can forget, you can destroy the relationship, you can sever the ties, but you can never go back and unmeet somebody. You can never go back and unsee something. So an outside-in way of living is very dangerous because everything that you come in contact with changes the inside. And that's kind of where the people were in the book of Judges. Like we mentioned last week, the book of Judges was this 300-year period of time between Israel coming into the promised land and before they had their first king, and they were designed to live under God's authority, follow the law, and it would be administered by judges. And they were put in this culture that was different than theirs. And all these warnings came from Joshua and came from the future judges of just, you know, don't do that. If you do that, it's going to change things for you. If you do that, it's going to change the way you live. If you do that, if you do that, if you do that. And they did that. And they did that, and they did that. Like we mentioned last week, the beginning of just about every chapter of the book of Judges says, Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So they got caught in this cycle. And the last verse of Judges sums it up. It says, you know, there was no king and everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And that's a parallel for our society because oftentimes we are caught in that trap where we don't acknowledge a king. We talked about that last week. And we just do what we want when we want with who we want. So I said we weren't going to be in Judges because we're actually still kind of in Joshua, which is on the front end of Judges right before Joshua dies. He gets the crew together and he gives them these sets of speeches to kind of send them on the right path, to kind of get their minds in the right place. And in Joshua chapter 23, in verse 12, Joshua speaking to the people says this, "For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them, so that you associate with them, and they with you." If you do that, here's what he's talking about. Okay, your forefathers, your grandfathers, your parents, the folks that rolled through the wilderness, okay? Moses was gone for like 5 minutes, and they built a golden thing to worship, because they just had to have something to worship. And they worshiped the Egyptian gods, the very thing that we pulled them out of slavery. They started worshiping that. Okay, so if you get in this culture, you're going to be surrounded by these people doing all these things. If you get in that culture and you start worshiping their gods, and they talk about intermarrying, and somebody asked me the last service, like, you know, the whole marriage, and it's when you marry somebody that worships a foreign god, you worship the foreign god. That's why that's in there. And guys, you know this to be true, right? Because you're just, you know. So he didn't want them worshiping foreign gods, so he didn't want them marrying foreign women that worship foreign gods. And so he establishes, okay, this is what your forefathers did. If you go back to that, here's what's going to happen. Verse 13. Know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you. But they will be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. If you forsake kind of what we're doing here, this special thing, this thing I've set you apart to do, this thing that keeps you away from mediocrity, this thing that's different than everyone else is doing, if you forsake that, this is your future. You know those battles that you've been able to win? You know that wasn't you, right? That was me. I won't do that anymore. And you will perish. And it talks about a snare and a trap. This culture, these gods that you are worshiping will entangle you. We talked about that again last week, right? Where you say yes to something over and over and over, and then now you can't say no to it because it's got you. It's like, if you do this, I'm not going to have my hand on you, so it's going to be a whole lot harder for you to win a battle. And it's going to trap you. It's going to ensnare you. And it'll be whips on your back. That's slavery, right? That's the imagery they would use for slavery, because slaves were whipped. So if you forsake what's going on here, this is your future. The good land that the Lord has given you. The Hebrew people struggled with a concept that we struggle with. And it's that God was keeping them from something. God, what are you keeping me from? What is it that you're not letting me have? It must be really awesome. Because other people are doing stuff and you say not to do that. Well, it must be pretty spectacular. And we struggle with that even in our own faith. Like, I come to church and they say I shouldn't do that, but that is really cool. What do they know that I don't know? If you have teenagers, you've probably had this conversation. Why can't I do that? Because I said you can't do that. But why? What are you keeping me from? What do you know? And the reality is, the first lie, the first temptation, and this is actually, if you are Christian, Jewish, or even if you are of Islamic heritage, the first recorded temptation is a deceiver speaking to someone and saying, are you sure God said that? Because God said not to eat that, right? But you know what'll happen if you eat that? You'll know stuff. God's just keeping you from something really spectacular. That's the first temptation, and I believe that that's the first temptation, the first lie spoken by Satan, because if you can believe that, then you build your entire belief system on this foundation of a lie that God can't be trusted, that God is somehow keeping something from you. So if he can establish that off the bat, it makes everything else crumble around it. So the people struggled with this, you know, God has given you this land, and they're like, yeah, but what about the other land? What about the other stuff? What about the other gods? What is God keeping me from? And he's like, look, I ain't keeping you from anything. I'm just keeping you. You might want to hang on to that. So Joshua continues his speech, and in chapter 24, verse 23, he says, now therefore, put away the foreign gods which are in your midst, and incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel. He says, put away your foreign gods. Whatever it is you're worshiping, whatever it is you're putting between me and you, whatever king it is that you're serving, put that away and incline, or your translation might say yield, which I think is a great word. Incline your heart. Yield your heart to God. Get rid of the stuff that's between God and you and yield your heart to God. See, God was doing something very significant in the nation of Israel. He was establishing a kingdom, and it was a kingdom unlike any other. It was a kingdom of conscience. And we even talk about this when Jesus was on the scene and he was establishing his kingdom, right? It wasn't a kingdom with a throne or a kingdom with a sword. It was a kingdom of conscience. It was a kingdom where lives were transformed on the inside, and they transformed everything on the outside. And that's what he was trying to set up here. Incline your heart to God. Let me establish this kingdom in your heart. It's not a physical kingdom. There's not a throne. There's not a sword. Let me establish this kingdom in your heart. And that's in contrast to what society wants to set up, which is kind of a kingdom of covet. A kingdom of covet is simply, I want, I need, I want, I need, I get. That's how that works. So everything on the outside influences everything on the inside. And you know how this works. We've all seen this play out. Many of us are either out of a broken relationship or a broken family or a weird family dysfunction because there are people living in the kingdom of covet. There's brokenness because somebody in your family down the road looked at something and said, I have to have that. Could have been another person, could have been an addiction, could have been a vice, could have been a habit, but they bowed to the kingdom of covet and they couldn't unsee it. And it severed a relationship. So we know how the kingdom of covet works, but the world is set up to live under the kingdom of covet. And God says, that's mediocre. That's average. That's not what I've set you apart for. I've set you apart to be a kingdom of conscience. I've set you apart to be inside out people. Or let me change the inside. Let me work on the inside and you will transform the outside. So the question that we all have to ask ourselves from time to time is not just, are you a Christian, but have you inclined your heart to God? Well, I'm a Christian. Yeah, me too. But have you yielded your heart to God? Have you said, you know what, there's a society and a culture that wants me to go this way, but God says to do this. I'm just going to do this. It makes more sense for me to do this because that's what God says to do. And if you incline your heart to God, if you yield your heart to God, then there are society triggers and there are cultural triggers that will say, what's he keeping you from? You know, why can't you do these things? Why can't you make the same kind of decisions the rest of us make? And it's like, look, he's not keeping me from anything. He's just keeping me. So to play this out, I have a challenge for you. There's a little prayer we're going to look at, and I would like every single person to say this prayer every day for a week, 7 days. And you can write it down or print it out or whatever, and you put it on your nightstand, do it when you wake up, put it on your dashboard, you know, when you're driving to work, say it, whatever. And don't just think it, don't just read it, like that's a good, like actually verbally say it every single day for a week. And just see what happens. If you want extra credit, do it for 2 weeks or whatever. But the prayer comes from Psalm 119. And it's three verses from Psalm 119, and it goes like this. Make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it. So we start off by saying, okay, God. The word there is make, or your Bible might say direct, it might say lead. But one thing I know that your Bible does not say is suggest. And that's kind of how we start our day, right? God, I'd like you to present to me three variable options. Suggest to me the paths of your righteousness and let me pick the one that I want to go down. And that's not what we're praying. We're praying, okay, God, make me, direct me, lead me down the right path. Why? Because it's cumbersome? Because it keeps me from cool stuff? Because it's miserable? No, because I love it. Make me walk in your paths, for I delight in it. It says, incline my heart to your testimonies and not to dishonest gain. That basically means that's the thing we say from time to time in our prayers. God, your stuff, not my stuff. Your will, not my will. Your testimonies, your statutes, your precepts, not what I have going on. So lead me in the path of your commandments. Incline my heart to your testimonies. And then turn away my eyes from looking at vanity and revive me in your ways. If you're just going to pick one to do, and just pick the third one, that's not even like a super religious thing. That's just a really smart thing to do. If some of you did the third one, you would have more money in the bank, right? Because you would have turned your eyes away from the new thing or the new deal or whatever. You know, but turn my eyes away from useless stuff. And useless stuff, that's a big umbrella, and you know where the useless stuff is in your life, you know, and in yours is different than mine, but turn my eyes away from useless stuff and revive me. And don't revive me in the culture, in society, or in all the stuff that's going on around me that is so anti-you and anti-your ways, but revive me in your ways. If you say this prayer out loud, and if you mean this prayer, and if you're sincere in this prayer, and you do this with some consistency, I believe that it changes things. Because I believe that it sets you on a path where you are yielding your heart to whatever it is God has for you. And then your mind starts to change, and then your heart starts to change, and then from the inside out, right? That's what we're shooting for here. From the inside out, everything about our decisions becomes different. Everything about our decisions becomes counterculture. The way we feel about relationships, the way we feel about money, the way we feel about sex, the way we feel about interpersonal dynamics, the way we feel about priorities, everything changes when you yield your heart to God.